John Steinbeck's Tortilla Flat isn't just another novel. It's a modern reimagining of Arthurian legend set among the paisanos of Monterey, California. Published in 1935 during the Great Depression, this deceptively simple tale became Steinbeck's first commercial success, laying the groundwork for his later masterpieces. What makes this book endure is how it transforms the lives of impoverished, marginalized men into something mythic and profound. Martin Scorsese once cited it as a formative influence on his understanding of male friendship, while Anthony Bourdain praised its honest depiction of communal meals as moments of transcendence. The book's cultural impact extends beyond literature. It challenged America's materialistic values during economic crisis and continues to raise uncomfortable questions about what truly constitutes wealth in a society obsessed with possessions. When Danny returns from World War I to Monterey's Tortilla Flat, he discovers an unexpected inheritance, two small houses left by his grandfather. This sudden acquisition of property marks a pivotal moment that sets the entire story in motion. The houses, modest wooden structures perched on the hillside overlooking the bay, represent more than mere shelter. They symbolize the intrusion of conventional society's values into the free-spirited paisano way of life. Rather than celebrating his good fortune, Danny feels deeply burdened by this responsibility, viewing it as a chain binding him to the material world he has long avoided. His immediate response reveals the essence of his character. He purchases a gallon of red wine and embarks on a spectacular rampage through town. This isn't mere drunken chaos, it's a deliberate rejection of respectability. He breaks windows along Alvarado Street, hurls creative insults at Italian fishermen in their native tongue, challenges the local constabulary to fights, and eventually lands himself in jail for 30 days. Each act of destruction serves as a rebellion against the constraints of property ownership. Danny's reaction speaks volumes about the paisano philosophy. Property and possessions represent not freedom, but constraint. The paisanos view ownership as a form of imprisonment, binding the spirit to material concerns and social obligations. Even in jail, his rebellious spirit manifests as he creates elaborate and obscene portraits of local officials using squash bedbugs on his cell walls, turning even his punishment into art. When he escapes with the jailer Tito Ralph, who later returns to report the escape, demonstrating the community's complex relationship with authority, we see the fluid nature of power and responsibility in this world where traditional rules hold little sway. The pivotal reunion with his old friend Pilon in the Pine Woods establishes the central relationship of the novel. As they share brandy around a crackling fire, the flames illuminating their weather-worn faces, they reminisce about friends lost in the war and adventures shared in younger days. Danny's casual declaration, "While I have a house, thou hast a house," becomes the founding principle of their brotherhood. This simple statement, delivered without calculation or legal formality, establishes Danny as an Arthurian figure whose natural generosity creates a fellowship around him. The archaic language he uses elevates the moment, suggesting ancient bonds of loyalty and friendship. What makes this opening sequence so compelling is how it systematically subverts conventional American values. Danny's inheritance, which should represent advancement and success in American society, is treated as a burden to be shared rather than a possession to be protected. His apparent irresponsibility, the drinking, fighting, and vandalism, paradoxically establishes him as the moral center of the story, demonstrating values more authentic than those of conventional society. His willingness to share everything he has without expectation of return or legal protection creates the moral framework within which all subsequent events unfold. This philosophy of communal ownership and shared responsibility stands in stark contrast to the individualistic materialism of mainstream American culture, setting up the novel's central tension between freedom and responsibility. Property ownership works like a contagious disease in Tortilla Flat, corrupting even the most well-intentioned characters through a cascade of increasingly complex moral compromises. When Danny inherits two houses and installs Pylon as a tenant in the second house for $15 monthly, a sum Pylon has never possessed and likely never will, we witness the first symptoms of this corruption. Though Danny never formally demands payment and Pylon never seriously offers it, the theoretical debt hovers between them like a dark cloud, disturbing their natural friendship, a relationship that had previously flourished without the complications of financial obligation. The poison of ownership spreads with remarkable speed when Pylon, now unexpectedly elevated to the role of landlord himself, rents half the house to Pablo Sanchez, who has just been released from jail. The scene unfolds with brilliant psychological insight as Pylon, transformed by his new status as property owner, immediately adopts the calculating mindset of a landlord. His reasoning becomes deliciously circular. If Danny ever demands the rent, he can deflect responsibility by saying, "I will pay when Pablo pays." The debt becomes a hot potato in an endless game, passed from hand to hand, with each player desperate not to be left holding it when the music stops. Life for Pylon and Pablo takes on a dreamy, philosophical quality in their shared space. Their mornings unfold with exquisite slowness as they savor life's simple pleasures. The dew-jeweled mallow weeds sparkling in the dawn light, the gradual warmth of the sun-baked porch, an endless conversation about Tortilla Flat's thousand daily dramas. Their philosophical musings reveal a profound understanding of practical economics. When Pablo whimsically wishes morning dew were diamonds, Pylon sagely points out that such abundance would render diamonds worthless, while wine, being consumed, always maintains its value and cost. The corruption of ownership extends its tentacles further when they encounter Jesus Maria Corcoran sleeping in a roadside ditch with a nearly empty bottle of wine. Upon learning he has come into money from selling a found rowboat, they execute an elaborate confidence scheme, convincing him he's deathly ill from sleeping outdoors and urgently needs proper shelter, conveniently available in their house for a modest fee. Their manipulation is simultaneously shameful and darkly comical. They successfully extract $2 from him that was originally intended for buying lingerie for Arabella Gross, solemnly promising to pass it along to Danny while privately planning to convert it into wine. What makes this sequence so powerful is how it illuminates the insidious way property ownership distorts human relationships and moral calculations. The Paisano's natural generosity and communal spirit, previously expressed through shared meals, stories, and adventures, becomes corrupted by the very concept of rent and ownership. The houses, rather than providing the security and stability promised by the American dream, become sources of anxiety, calculation, and moral compromise. Through this masterful portrayal, Steinbeck brilliantly demonstrates how the supposedly civilizing influence of property ownership can actually undermine the communal values and simple pleasures that sustain genuine human happiness. The characters become entangled in increasingly complex webs of obligation and deception, all while trying to maintain their philosophical detachment and appreciation for life's basic pleasures. The burning of Pylon's rented house serves as a cleansing ritual that restores the natural order of friendship. After convincing Jesus Maria to join their household, the three friends celebrate with wine under Torelli's rosebush, later stealing supper from Mrs. Torelli through flattery. As night falls, they light a blessed candle to San Francisco and continue drinking until they fall asleep. The toppled candle ignites the house, and though Jesus Maria wakes in time to save his friends, they leave their remaining wine behind, a fitting punishment for their earlier manipulations. The fire represents both judgment and redemption. It destroys the property that has corrupted their relationships, but preserves their lives, giving them a chance to rebuild their friendship on more honest terms. Danny's reaction to the news is telling. After a brief conventional display of anger, he feels mostly relief that this burden of property has been removed. The morning after reveals the true nature of these relationships. Danny sits on his porch, wiggling his toes in the sunshine, contemplating the ruins with unexpected satisfaction. Meanwhile, the three culprits awaken in the forest, discussing how to approach their wronged friend. Their solution is brilliantly Paisano. They raid a picnic party and return to Danny with arms loaded with stolen offerings, fruits, sandwiches, olives, soda pop, and potato salad. The reconciliation scene that follows captures the essence of male friendship. Danny curses them thoroughly, performing the expected role of the aggrieved party, but softens when presented with food and a pink brassiere and for Mrs. Morales. After feasting together, Danny forgives them completely, and they share grappa by the fire. When Jesus Maria rashly promises they will ensure Danny never goes hungry, a pledge that alarms Pylon and Pablo, who recognize it as a burden worse than rent, they nevertheless swear loyalty, their friendship sealed with tears of genuine affection. What emerges from this sequence is a profound insight. True friendship exists beyond property and obligation. The fire, rather than destroying their community, purifies it by removing the artificial constraints of ownership and debt. The friends are now united in Danny's single house, their relationship restored to its natural state of mutual care and shared experience. The story of the pirate represents the moral heart of Tortilla Flat. This simple-minded man cuts wood each day, earning a quarter that he mysteriously saves rather than spending on wine or food. His five loyal dogs, Fluff, Enrique, Pajarito, Rudolph, and Senor Alec Thompson, follow him everywhere, sleeping beside him in an abandoned chicken house. When Pilon and the others discover the pirate's daily earnings, they hatch a plan to separate him from his money. But their scheme takes an unexpected turn when they invite him to live with them, ostensibly out of concern for his welfare, but actually to discover his secret hoard. The pirate's response is heartbreaking in its simplicity. "I would not have worried them if I had known," he says, tears filling his eyes at the mere thought that others might care about him. The arrangement proves immediately beneficial, as the pirate brings increasingly generous offerings from his morning rounds of restaurants, fresh fish, half pies, untouched bread. His gratitude for basic human kindness reveals how little he has experienced of it. After failed attempts to discover his money, the friends try frightening him with stories of buried treasure being stolen. But the pirate surprises them. Returning one dawn, he presents a heavy canvas bag containing nearly 1,000 silver quarters. The revelation of the pirate's purpose transforms the friend's greed into shame. For years, he has been saving to buy a gold candlestick for San Francisco de Assisi, fulfilling a promise made when his beloved dog recovered from illness. "All those years I lay in that chicken house, and I did not know any pleasure," he confesses with tears. "But now, oh, now I am very happy." This simple act of faith and devotion forces the friend to confront their own moral failings. The money they had coveted becomes sacred, a symbol of promise and devotion that they must now help protect. The pirate's innocent goodness awakens something long dormant in these cynical men, compelling them to become guardians of his dream rather than its destroyers. What makes this sequence so powerful is how it subverts expectations. The seemingly weakest member of the group proves to possess the strongest moral character. The pirate's devotion to his promise reveals the emptiness of the friend's endless schemes for wine and pleasure. His simple faith challenges their cynicism and ultimately redeems them by giving them a purpose beyond immediate gratification. The search for buried treasure on St. Andrew's Eve reveals both the superstitious worldview of the Paisanos and their gradual moral awakening. When Big Joe Portagee returns from the army, where he spent most of his time in jail, he joins Pilon in searching the haunted forest on the night when buried treasure supposedly glows through the earth. The setting is mystical, fog covering the moon, trees moving like shadows, and silent figures passing by who might be living men or spirits. When Pilon spots a soft pillar of blue light emerging from the ground, he follows proper ritual by placing a cross of sticks over the spot and drawing a protective circle. His explanation to Joe reveals his growing sense of obligation to Danny. The treasure will be entirely for Danny, he declares, a gesture of gratitude for Danny's generosity. This marks a significant evolution from his earlier schemes to avoid paying rent. The treasure hunt becomes a metaphor for the friends' spiritual journey. They dig through the night until Joe's shovel strikes something hard, only to discover at daybreak that their treasure is merely a concrete geodetic survey marker. This anticlimax might seem disappointing, but it leads to Pallone's philosophical realization that perhaps riches would have been bad for Danny anyway. A rationalization, certainly, but one that contains a kernel of truth about how wealth corrupts relationships. The episode takes a comical turn when Pallone steals Joe's pants while he sleeps on the beach, trading them to Mrs. Torelli for wine. His conscience eventually compels him to steal back both the pants and Danny's blanket, which Joe had earlier traded for wine. He finds Joe hiding from a Girl Scout gathering, unable to leave the beach without his trousers. As they walk back to Monterey together, Pallone delivers a solemn lesson about the untrustworthiness of women, while Joe remains grateful to Pallone for recovering his pants. This sequence brilliantly combines comedy with moral development. The friends' superstitions about glowing treasure reflect their magical thinking, but Pallone's intention to share any findings with Danny shows his growing sense of obligation and gratitude. Even his theft and return of Joe's pants demonstrates a convoluted moral progress. He may still be a thief, but he's becoming a thief with principles. The episode illustrates how moral growth in Tortilla Flat occurs not through dramatic conversions, but through small, often contradictory steps toward greater loyalty and consideration for others. Romance in Tortilla Flat bears little resemblance to conventional love stories. Instead, Steinbeck presents relationships marked by pragmatism, manipulation, and occasional moments of unexpected tenderness. When Danny becomes entangled with Sweets Ramirez, who tricks him into buying her a vacuum cleaner on installment, his friends view this not as a romantic development, but a threat to their communal harmony. Pylon's rescue operation is both devious and effective. He steals the vacuum cleaner, hiding it in a gunny sack covered with rose branches. When Sweets confronts him, he claims he's selling the rosebush in Monterey. After successfully stealing the machine, he sells the motorless vacuum cleaner to Torelli for 2 gallons of wine. The friends celebrate Danny's liberation from his obligation to Sweets, with Danny happily declaring, "God damn it, I'm sick of it!" Big Joe Portagee's encounter with Tia Ignacia presents another unromantic view of love. Caught in a rainstorm, Joe takes shelter in the house of this taciturn widow of 45. Despite her increasingly obvious attempts at seduction, suggesting he remove his wet coat, dimming the lamp, and speaking of warmth on rainy nights, Joe remains oblivious, eventually falling into a mountainous sleep complete with thunderous snores. Enraged by this insult, Tia Ignacia beats him furiously, driving him into the muddy street. As he grabs her to stop the beating, something unexpected happens. Love surges through Big Joe like a great freshet. Their passionate encounter in the mud is briefly interrupted by a policeman, who merely advises them to move out of the road before continuing on his rounds. These unromantic depictions of love serve an important purpose in the novel's moral universe. They contrast sharply with the deep loyalty and affection the friends feel for one another. While romantic relationships are portrayed as transactional or purely physical, the bonds between Danny and his friends contain genuine tenderness and sacrifice. When the friends throw a party for the increasingly depressed Danny, working hard at cutting squids to earn money, they demonstrate a depth of care that exceeds any romantic attachment in the book. This contrast suggests that Steinbeck sees male friendship as a more reliable and meaningful form of love than romantic entanglements. The friends may steal from each other, lie to each other, and occasionally fight, but they ultimately form a community based on mutual support and understanding that transcends conventional relationships. As Danny falls into a profound depression, his friends recognize that drastic action is needed. Once vibrant and mischievous, Danny becomes listless, barely moving from bed to porch to table and back again. The conversations of his friends flow around him, but he shows no interest. Even when Big Joe invades his bed, Danny is so apathetic that Pillin and Pablo must administer the beating for him. Pillin's solution is both desperate and perfect. They will throw a party for Danny. This isn't just any celebration, but a legendary event that will shake Danny out of his existential crisis. The friends make an unprecedented sacrifice, working cutting squids for Chin Key to earn money for wine and food. This labor, which they would normally avoid at all costs, demonstrates the depth of their concern for Danny. News of the party electrifies Tortilla Flat. The entire community joins the effort, bringing food, decorations, and gallons of wine. Meanwhile, Danny wanders through Monterey like a ghost, standing on the wharf staring into the deep water. Pablo later claims he saw a black bird hovering over Danny's head, an ominous sign of what's to come. When Pillin and Pablo find Danny and tell him about the party, something in him changes dramatically. He races home to become the center of the most legendary celebration Tortilla Flat would ever know. At the party, Danny achieves mythic proportions, drinking impossible amounts, fighting with superhuman strength, and performing amorous feats beyond mortal capability. As the night wears on, Danny grows more terrible and magnificent, challenging anyone to fight him. When no one dares, he storms out to face the enemy who is worthy of Danny. The terrified guests hear his challenge, then a thump, then silence. They find him at the bottom of the gulch, having fallen 40 feet. This sequence transforms Danny from a depressed man into a mythic hero whose death becomes a form of transcendence. The party isn't merely a celebration, but a ritual that allows Danny to reclaim his essential nature before his final confrontation with mortality. His challenge to an unseen enemy suggests he's fighting not just physical opponents, but the constraints of conventional life itself. Danny's death, coming at the height of his legendary status, completes his transformation from ordinary man to mythic figure. Like Arthur or other legendary heroes, he doesn't simply die, but is translated into something beyond ordinary existence. The party serves as both his Last Supper and his apotheosis, a final glorious rejection of the limitations that had begun to crush his spirit. Danny's death shatters the fellowship that had formed around him. The doctors arrive quickly, followed by Father Ramon, who had been dragged from his bed, uncertain whether he was needed for an exorcism, baptism, or lynching. Danny is laid on his bed with candles all around him, breathing heavily. His friends gather in the bedroom. Pilon, Pablo, Jesus Maria, Big Joe, Johnny Pom-Pom, Tito Ralph, the pirate, and his dogs. When Father Ramon emerges, his face unchanged, the women immediately break into wails while the men shuffle outside. The military funeral promised by the government, with caisson, flag, cavalry escort, and firing squad, becomes a source of anxiety for Danny's closest friends. Everyone in Tortilla Flat prepares their finest attire, but Danny's friends face an insurmountable problem. They have no decent clothes to wear. Their jeans and shirts are tattered, especially after the party, and they can't borrow clothes since everyone needs their own finery. On the funeral day, they stand across from the church in their rags, watching the cavalry, band, and caisson arrive. As the procession begins, they slink along the sidewalk before shame overwhelms them. They flee to hide in the tall grass by the cemetery, watching from a distance as Danny is laid to rest with military honors. Afterward, they break into Torelli's house for wine and return to Danny's empty home to drink in his memory. As evening falls, they reminisce about Danny's love for wine, women, and lively songs. When Pilon accidentally drops a lit match on a newspaper, none move to extinguish it. They watch with knowing smiles as the flame catches the wall and grows. Better that this symbol of their friendship should die as Danny did, in one glorious assault on the gods, than pass to some joyless stranger. Only when the flames engulf the house do they walk dreamily outside. They stand among the crowd as firefighters arrive too late, watching until Danny's house becomes a mound of steaming cinders. Then, looking at each other strangely, they turn and walk away, no two walking together. This ending perfectly captures the novel's bittersweet philosophy. The burning house represents both destruction and purification, the end of their fellowship, but also its preservation in memory, untainted by decay or compromise. Like Arthur's knights after the fall of Camelot, they must now go their separate ways, carrying the memory of their brief, glorious time together. The final image, of each friend walking alone into the night, suggests that some experiences are so perfect they cannot and should not be repeated. The fellowship of Danny's house, like all beautiful things, was destined to be temporary. Its very transience makes it precious, a moment of communion and belonging in lives otherwise defined by isolation and struggle.